In the middle of the road of my life, I awoke in a dark wood where the true way was wholly lost. Some of you may recognize those words as the opening to Dante's Divine Comedy. I first read those words many, many years ago, during a time in my life when everything seemed to be falling into place. I didn't feel lost. It didn't seem dark in my life. I was a college graduate with a good job and finally a little disposable income. My free time was spent playing and partying with friends. Nothing seemed to be out of place. And yet, these words startled me. In the middle of the road of my life, I awoke in a dark wood where the way was truly lost, truly and wholly lost. There I was, in the middle of the road of my life, choices branching out like limbs on a great tree, and I didn't know what road I was supposed to take. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. Dante's metaphorical use of these very simple images to describe his spiritual life resonated with my own interior landscape. Standing on the surface of my stable, well-oriented life, I caught glimpses of an unfamiliar world, and that world was in me. Metaphors can bring us to unfamiliar places in our interior landscape, places where literalism just can't go. They transcend separation and duality. They carry us from the material domain of proof and evidence to the spiritual domain, where nothing can be proven, measured, or even seen with the eye, but where everything is known by the heart. Now, most people are familiar with metaphor as a literary device found in fiction and fables, proverbs and poetry. Metaphorical images and symbols are the building blocks of myths. Metaphor speaks to a part of us that is deeper than the rational mind. It resonates with emotions, with the spirit, and this is what moves us to act. Sometimes we are moved so profoundly by a piece of poetry, a piece of scripture, a piece of music, that we begin to change our lives. Looking back on that time when I read those words from Dante, I realized that this was the first in a long line of spiritual experiences that would lead me right here to ministry. Metaphors take us and take on a special importance in that spiritual domain. The mythologist that Les spoke of earlier, Joseph Campbell, has said, "Spiritual truths that transcend time and geography must be born in metaphorical vessels. They must be born in metaphorical vessels, whose meaning is found in their connotations and not their denotations, not the hard, factual casings of their historical reference." Now, the Buddha preached a similar message. He used much simpler words, though. "A man walking along a high road sees a great river below. He collects sticks and foliage, makes a raft, paddles across the river, and reaches the other shore. The raft, or the boat, is the Dhamma, the teaching, offered as metaphor. It helps us to reach the other side. Metaphor is uniquely able to take us from one shore, the shore of waking consciousness, to that other shore of undiscovered awareness, enlightenment. How is that done? Why is metaphor uniquely suited to inspire us, to move us to spiritual depth better than literal language? When metaphor is used to give meaning to something in the material world, this world of time and space, there's a concrete parallel between the metaphor and that something that it's trying to describe. So take this example. The congregants responded to the pledge drive with a tidal wave of generosity. Or plans to repaint the sanctuary bright purple set off a storm of controversy. Now, when we move into the spiritual domain, there is no such concrete parallel, because metaphor points to something that is not anchored in human geography or human time. Give us this day our daily bread. It doesn't mean food for the physical body. Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. It doesn't mean that we should all quit our jobs and stop working. The literal image, daily bread, points to a human need for spiritual sustenance. And the literal image, lilies of the field, points to our need not to struggle so hard with our lives, to surrender a little bit more. Metaphor will always be needed to travel from the familiar shore of the material world to the undiscovered world of the spiritual world. And that shore, that other world, it's not on a map anywhere. It is a heightened awareness of your own interior landscape. It is a new consciousness of the inherent harmony between yourself and the rest of the world. It is the immediate knowledge that the kingdom is here, available to everyone. What else waits on that other shore? Another journey to yet another shore. The spiritual journey takes us to a destination that leads to another destination, and on and on and on. Talking about spirituality is difficult these days, especially in our present culture, because this culture has become overly literal, overly materialistic. People want a concrete, literal definition for everything, and that includes spirituality. And I've heard this from some of you. Can you just give me a definition of spirituality, something that I can just hang on to? The writer Annie Dillard speaks of this difficulty and of the longing that still exists in spite of it. We are no longer primitive. Now, the whole world seems not holy. It is difficult to undo our own damage and to recall to our presence that which we have asked to leave. It is hard to desecrate a grove and then change your mind. We douse the burning bush and we cannot rekindle it. We are lighting matches in vain under evergreen trees. Did the wind used to cry and the wind shout forth praise? Now, speech has perished from among the lifeless things of the earth, and living things say very little to very few. People are, of course, talking about spirituality and religion all the time. But if we listen carefully to any number of Sunday morning sermons that are going on around here, we would hear our neighboring preachers talking about God as if he were an actual physical being with superpowers living up there somewhere in the sky. We would hear them talking about Jesus being born of a biological virgin and then being literally brought back to life exactly 3 days after his execution. Or talking about bread and wine being turned into literal flesh and blood. Now, when a community continually interprets its spiritual stories literally, those stories become concretized, The spirit departs, and all that is left is a hard, factual shell. If the Buddha were listening to some of these preachers, he might direct their attention to the parable of that man and the boat, in which he goes on to say, "Now, suppose that man, after he reaches the other shore, takes the boat and puts it on his head and walks around with it on his head wherever he goes. Would he be using the boat appropriately? No. A reasonable man would realize that the boat has been very useful to him, yes, in crossing the river and helping him to arrive safely to the other shore, but once he has arrived, it is proper to leave the boat behind and walk on without it. This is using the boat appropriately. In the same way, all spiritual truths should be used to cross over. They should not be held on to once you have arrived. You should let go of even the most profound teachings, even the most profound insight." Now, to me, it looks as if some religious literalists are wearing boats on their heads. To me, this is no way to move toward true spiritual transformation. The efforts of humans, human beings, and the human institutions that they created, the efforts they have to try to grab exclusive claims to spiritual truth, have stripped away the vitality of all of the sacred texts. Metaphor hardens into dogma, and then it can no longer carry us over. Religious leaders of all faiths should stop trying to put spiritual lightning in a literal bottle. They need to claim a transcendent spiritual truth through metaphorical interpretations instead of literal ones. Now, Unitarian Universalists have been rejecting claims of historical truths by traditional Christian churches for a long, long time. So it's ironic that they end up in the same place. Both made literal interpretations of the Bible, but one used those literal interpretations to embrace the text as true dogma, and the other used it to reject it. But they both ended up in the exact same place, rejecting the power of metaphor to carry them to greater spiritual depth. In the early history of American Unitarianism in the 19th century, some of our greatest ministers swept out every bit of mystery and miracle from the Bible. The story of the Great Flood and of that big ark that could hold 2x2 of all the creation, not scientifically verifiable. So the entire story was cast out. The story of Jesus feeding the masses with loaves and fishes, a physical impossibility, I'm afraid. And so that was cast out. The metaphorical meanings, the spiritual teachings were lost. And this is what Ralph Waldo Emerson called the corpse-cold Unitarianism of his time. Thanks to him and the other transcendentalists, poetry, mystery, and metaphor returned to the faith. But even with this move toward metaphor, some of us still reject that text, the Bible, just because of the rigid meaning that has been given to it by literalists. It's a kind of guilt by association. So just because there are some people who use the Bible to support homophobia, the entire Bible is dismissed and deemed useless as an aid to helping spiritual growth. Or rejecting the literal interpretations of the Quran, the entire faith of Islam is rejected. People often ask me what Unitarian Universalists use as sacred text. And I tell them, well, we don't limit our concept of sacred text to just one book, or even to books. We look for sacred meaning in all kinds of unlikely places. We find all kinds of things and events to help us move closer to the holy. There are 100 ways to kneel and kiss the ground, even as there is just one ground. Being a liberal faith means that we are open to multiplicity and plurality, as expressed in our UU 6 sources, which includes our Judeo-Christian heritage, as well as earth-based and world religions. This openness to different ways of knowing may explain why we're very comfortable using metaphor, especially in the literary form. We tend to use a lot of poetry here. UUs love Rumi. We love Thoreau and Langston Hughes and Denise Levertov and Mary Oliver. You can find all of them in the back of your hymnal. Being open to metaphor is a part of the Unitarian Universalist temperament. But I wonder, does it hold any deeper spiritual significance? Is it vital to our faith? Is it something that's life-altering? Or is it just something that's aesthetically pleasing and something that doesn't push anybody's religious authority buttons? In some ways, the 21st century Unitarian Universalist faith is like a shore on which many boats are beached. On this shore is the shore of the material life, the life of getting and spending, and we're all part of this shore. And we're pleased to stand on this shore, looking at all the interfaith flotilla of boats. We sing their songs, we read their poems, and listen to their parables about their boats. A lot of us are moved, and so we take these boats out for day trips and long weekends. Others of you have been out in your boats for years and years. But some of us hesitate, and we're stuck on that shore. We long for wholeness, for a life beyond the accumulation of wealth or even knowledge. We long for deeper connections with other people, with the earth, and with that something in the universe that cannot be named. But we just can't seem to loosen our grip on reason and rationality enough to push off from that shore. To have that wholeness that we are longing for, we have got to get into one of those boats and let it carry us to the other side. From solid ground, through the choppy waters, to the unexplored destination that is ultimately ourself. So what keeps us on that shore? What keeps us in that mode of spiritual sightseer? Well, we're wary. We're afraid of losing control, losing our bearings, surrendering to a greater power. All of these ideas set off that little bell in our heads. Maybe it's that cult warning bell. Don't get sucked in, because just when you start letting go, that's when they bring in the Kool-Aid. Be careful. Now, I'm making a joke here, but I know that the fear of losing control and the fear of too much emotion and getting carried away like that is frightening, and it's real. The other thing is, when you're standing on this shore, you can't see the other shore. And so many of us, trained as we are to think logically and rationally, we want proof. We want proof of where we're going, a map, a picture, anything before we are willing to get into one of those boats and shove off. And that's where the bind is. It's ironic that our inner landscape is actually an unexplored destination, but it often is. We can't come to know it if we're not willing to launch ourselves from the shore, but we're not willing to launch ourselves from the shore until we have some proof that that journey is going to be successful and not a huge waste of our time. The wish for proof is a vain one. If proof could be provided, the destination wouldn't be transformative. There is no proof, but there are metaphors. And that's the way out of the bind. Listen more deeply for metaphor. We heard some beautiful metaphor in the Delver's lyrics this morning. Wonderful, transformative metaphors. Listen for the ones that resonate with you. Read poetry to your loved ones. Read poetry to your pets. Recite the morning prayers. Read the holy texts. Sit down and listen to music and let it carry you away. Trust other people who have been out in their boats. Trust the universe. Trust yourself. Trust that there is a reason that you're sitting here on a Sunday morning other than just because you're having a nice time or you want to listen to good music or see your friends. Take a risk. And if you haven't already, go ahead and launch one of those boats. Be it the Buddhist boat or the pagan boat or the Christian boat, or fashion your own boat out of sticks and foliage from all the great sources of wisdom, then push off to the next unexplored shore. May it be so. Amen.